Hello, welcome to episode 8 of the Gita Decoded. As you know, we are still on chapter 2, and Sister Denise has taken us through her understanding of what this scripture means, and more specifically, what chapter 2 means to you, the reader. Sister Denise, thank you very much for joining us once again.
Thank you.
In chapter 2, Sister Denise, we hear of the three gunas for the first time. The English-speaking Western audience who is not familiar with Hindi language, this is a brand new concept. And as we know, we have many viewers who are not familiar with the Hindi. So please explain what the three gunas mean.
The three gunas are the three qualities of anything. They refer to a spectrum all the way from very pure to very impure. They refer to another spectrum all the way from very new to very old and worn out. They refer to anything from as something that is very good, very healthful, very beneficial, all the way through to something which is very harmful and very bad for you health-wise and wealth-wise and in every way. So everything is qualified by these three gunas. For example, a spiritual effort. You could make satopradhan effort, very, very pure effort, which is sincere, which is without looking for any peripheral benefits, and then a very impure effort would be always looking at what are you going to get out of it. A young child is called satopradhan, pure, they're innocent, they haven't been damaged by life, they don't know what it is to be an adult and all of the impurities connected with that. And then as a person gets older, they become more worldly, they become more susceptible to corruption, and then as they become very old, they become weak, lose their capacities, and then they die. Everything in the world goes through change, so when something comes into being, it's pure. And as it persists, it starts to disintegrate. So it's a little bit like the idea of entropy. And then the thing falls into decrepitude and then remixes again with the fundamental elements of matter. The soul also goes through these stages. Now, I think that the injunction of the Gita saying you have to be beyond the three gunas is based on the idea that the soul itself does not pass through change. Whereas in the knowledge of the Brahma Kumaris that we learn from Supreme Incorporeal Shiva through his instrument Prajapita Brahma is that the soul also changes and the soul goes through sato, rajo and tamo. These are the three gunas, sato, rajo and tamo. Now what we learn as we call ourselves rajyogis, and rajyoga is what is mentioned in the Gita as the top rate yoga. So if you want to be a rajyogi, you have to live in a pure lifestyle, and a pure lifestyle corresponds to the caste of Brahmin. So the name Prajapita Brahma means that when we call ourselves Brahma Kumars and Brahma Kumaris, our relationship with incorporeal God is through this medium, Prajapita Brahma. And then the instructions, which is also called the knowledge of the Gita, the instruction is you must make yourself satopradhan. And then the yoga that we do, which is called the contemplation of the incorporeal Supreme One, that causes the quality of the soul to alter, almost like you're altering the pitch of a musical instrument. You're altering the quality of the soul from a very tamopradan, dissonant, discordant type of a note to one which is absolutely tuned, absolutely pure. And so another way of describing yoga is tuning. Tuning yourself to God, who is perfect harmony. And we who begin this process in a state which we call tamopradan, absolutely spiritually depleted, wasted, corrupted, influenced by matter, full of desire, and so on and so forth, regular people. And then you start on this journey, this study, this practice, and very slowly you become progressively Rajo, and then Sato, and then Sato Pradhan. So this is the journey of Raj Yoga, where you are reversing the effect of entropy on the soul.
And you pull all this off whilst living in a world that's not Sato Pradhan, Sister Denise? It's pitch black darkness outside, spiritually speaking. And you're trying to emerge and brighten your own light in a world that offers 100% resistance. How on earth does that one pull it off?
I think the faith in yourself, faith in God, and faith in your destiny goes a very, very long way, because you have this idea that yes, okay, this is God who's talking to me, and yes, I am like Arjuna, the seeker. I am on the battlefield, I am confused and distressed by the realities around me, and I recognize the one who's talking to me, and so I'm going to follow. And even though there are times that you see in the story of Arjuna that he will hesitate, but, you know, basically he does do it. And I think we also find that when we just sometimes even close your eyes and do it, you're able to actually go against your lower nature, your base nature, your state of doubt, and so on. And there is this aspect of surrendering your intellect to a higher, wiser being, you see. Because if you recognize God, then you also recognize that God is substantially higher than you as a human being. So when you're reacting or resisting or hesitating, it's your humanness that's coming into play here. And then God is saying, as you mentioned earlier, he's encouraging, he's cajoling, he's doing so many things to get the Arjuna to do this work. And you're in that position and you start doing it, you find that you cover ground. And as you start, even though you're not to look for results, you do get results. And when you get results, that gives you confidence. And your confidence gives you a kind of faith that you're on the right track, and even though there is adversity and difficulty and opposition and whatnot, well, that's part of the course. You know, this is why it's called the battlefield. Don't expect war to be anything other than very chaotic and scary, but if you're going to be a warrior, a spiritual warrior, in the circumstances of adversity, and what you're trying to do is achieve that connectedness with God, that's the victory. If you say, I consider myself as a spiritual warrior on the battlefield, it is a battle, there is chaos, it's foggy, you can't see your way, but you have a kind of a faith based on your recognition that, look, God has selected you as his student. That means you must be potentially capable. So you have to have faith in that. And God is leading you. God is not going to lead you astray or in the wrong direction or whatever. Expect to be tested to the limit. But that's the contract, you can say. And so you start to experience results. You start to experience that you're actually acquiring greater control over your feelings. The quality of your feelings is getting rarefied and more subtle. You experience there is sustainable change going on. You need to be in it for the long haul, because this type of transformation doesn't take place just overnight.
Okay, Sister Denise, I now would like to move on to the next stanza, which reads as follows. Fixed in yoga, perform actions, having abandoned attachment, Arjuna. What is yoga, and how is abandoning attachment linked to the subject of yoga?
It's very, very deep, very, very interesting. Attachment, well, let's start with yoga, okay? Yoga means that you are tuned to God. Yoga literally means a yoke. So it is a link between you, the soul, and God, the Supreme Soul. And it is a link of the mind. So what you need to be in yoga, is mentally connected with the Supreme Being, so that you're operating, you know, in broadcasting, you have a signal which is coming from the broadcast channel, and it comes to you as a receiver. And if you're connected with that broadcasting signal, then you pick up what's being broadcast. But if you lose the signal, there's nothing. So it's a little bit like that. You have to be linked in that way. And as long as you are linked, it's as if the energy of God, the wisdom of God, the guidance of God is right there operating with you. And if you want to do that, you have to be really in your power, you have to be in your consciousness of yourself as a soul, and not under the illusion that you are this person, you know, that the person who you see is, in a way, is a sense perception. And what you have to be is that which perceives the sense perception, but not the object of the sense perception.
What does that mean, Sister Denise? You just lost me. The last part, you just lost me. Explain, please.
When you're connected in yoga, you have to be on the same level as God. God is discarnate, non-human, operating on a different dimension from the dimension of matter, right? And we are humans operating with bodies, through bodies, in the dimension of matter. But when you're in yoga, you are detached. And so in the stanza, it is saying, perform action without attachment. That means you're performing action. You're doing something because it's the right thing to do, not because you feel like doing it, or there's something in it for you, or because of a desire, or any of the sensorial consequences that you were talking about earlier, you know. But you're linked with God, you understand what that dimension is, and from that dimension you come into this dimension and you perform right action, because by performing right action, not only do you become right, but everything that you touch also becomes right. So in that sense, you become a kind of an instrument for the divinity of God to be mixed into the chaotic state of the earth, which is a transformative energy.
The next two lines, Sister Denise reads, and having become indifferent to success or failure, it is said that evenness of mind is yoga. That is a very curious expression. I do not know what the Hindi version is. you may, but it says that this is the achievement once you become indifferent to success or failure. That being said, I've yet to meet a person who has achieved this. It's Sister Denise, if you fail at anything, okay, you feel the sorrow of your failure. If you achieve something, whether internally or externally, you do a victory dance because, you know, you cracked it, you got it, you won it, you achieved it. So, as human beings, we have needs and we have ambitions. And what is spoken of here is neutrality. Okay? Why should one be neutral? You're alive in this world?
There's a law that operates here, a law of spirituality, which says that if you take the success, the victory, you take it into yourself, you know, and you receive that fruit of action, you will have to receive the opposite as well. And so that puts you in this swing of victory and defeat, success and failure, and so on. And when you are connected with God in yoga, you're independent of that. So the sign of yoga is that equanimity. Because, you see, in terms of the big picture, the big scheme of things, these are oscillations. And if you
oscillations
say
oscillations are not good,
oscillations are oscillations. If you say, I love the victory, I don't like the failure, it's in one of the teachings, which we call Murlis in Brahma Kumaris, there was a very interesting line which said, you know, your only problem is you're caught up in right and wrong. You're caught up in good and bad, you see, because that then makes people moralistic and it stops a person from being free. So the whole aim of all of this is you have to be free. So if you're going for the victory and the defeat, you're going to be in karmic bondage. You're not going to be free. If you are neutral, you are going to be free. So if you want to be free, then you have to become neutral.
If one is neutral, what is your feelings like? Because the purpose of being a human being, the purpose of life, is to be happy. And what is God saying? Be neutral, not happy?
It's not like that. The purpose of life is not to experience an emotion of happiness. You know, happiness and the emotion of feeling happy, are you having fun yet? They're two different things altogether.
Okay, so happiness is not euphoria?
No.
Happiness is not, okay, got that? Happiness is not euphoria. What okay, you told us what it's not. What is it then? What is happiness?
Euphoria is a high. For every high you get, you're going to get a low.
Okay, so
the purpose of human life is not to be up and down.
Okay, so don't get on a high, stay neutral. Okay, that's the message.
But we're not talking about emotions here. We're talking about state of being. It's different. A person who is a yogi has to be ultra, ultra sensitive. That means their feelings are able to cross from the most extreme bliss all the way to the most extreme horror. And you will see all those feelings described in the Gita. And what you need is the ability to manage those extremes of feelings. And that is called spiritual power. So when you are experiencing something, like, say for example, God will be able to feel whatever anyone in the world is feeling, of which people are going through very, very extreme forms of suffering, for example, without getting disturbed and distressed and out of order by it. Do you see what I mean? So you have to have a great deal of power to manage the feelings. The difficulty for people is they want to have all these feelings, but they're not able to manage them.
I found, Sister Denise, that the next stanza to be very thought-provoking. Action is inferior by far to the yoga of wisdom, Arjuna. Okay, is this the same as the yoga of knowledge? That's my question. And the second part is seek refuge in wisdom, exclamation mark. Despicable are those whose motives are based on the fruit of action. Despicable. Like, shame on you. Yeah, ouch. Okay, this part, this is the part where the one who's invested in this scripture will feel something, because most of us have a motive for something that we do. That's not honorable.
Well, if you have a motive that's not honorable and you say my motive is not honorable, then you're already telling yourself that you're on some level despicable.
Okay.
But people don't like hearing the truth.
Yeah, they don't, Sister Denise. It hurts to hear this. Somebody might be feeling pain right now listening to you.
You know, one very interesting expression that we learn about in Brahma Kumaris is that the thing that's really the problem is your ego, or your false ego. And whenever you feel this feeling of insult, that's a sign that you are operating out of ego. And what you want to be as an enlightened person, as a yogi, is without false ego.
What is the refuge that's offered by wisdom?
You can say wisdom or you can say knowledge.
Okay.
So I prefer to say knowledge than wisdom, because wisdom is very subjective, really, as to what exactly that is. A person who is saying, okay, the truth that God is telling me is fixed, is true. And your feelings may be up and down. Circumstances may be up and down. But the truth is, you're immortal, you're indestructible, and all the things that happen are, to a large extent, illusory, in the sense that they arise, they persist for a bit, then they disappear again. Do not give it any mind, but stay stable in the knowledge of what you are, of what's going on, this big drama going on, and that you are under guidance of God, who is taking you to a state of absolute clear-mindedness, purity, freedom. Stay on that track and don't be caught up in distractions.
Sister Denise, how does the question of safety, personal safety, fit into this picture? Because that what comes to mind when I see the word refuge.
You see, a person who is operating on the basis of body consciousness, who is under the sway of the negative emotions, their susceptibility to their passions and emotions will make them unable to make good decisions when they have to make decisions. They will make reactions based on their feelings, which will mean they will do a karma which will put them into trouble, which is danger. That's what it's about.
Sister Denise, the next stanza I found to be very curious. The first two lines read, "He whose wisdom is established casts off here in the world both good and evil actions." Now, why would somebody cast off good actions?
You see, there are three kinds of karma. When you start on a spiritual practice, your level is very low. and you have a lot of karmic debts. So what you need is good karma. And the reason you need to do good karma is to handle your debts. Now, you also are in the habit of doing bad karma, which increases your debts. The state of being in debt keeps you in this good karma, bad karma condition. What you want to be is out of that state of being in debt. And the aim is to get to a point where you're neutral. You do good karma, not because you are in debt, but because you're in the habit of it. So you can see that in this chapter, all the time, Krishna is guiding Arjuna towards akarma. And in your translation is written non-action, but in Brahma Kumaris, we wouldn't use the word non-action or inaction. We would use the term neutral action. And so what we also want to do is to establish ourselves in interaction with God. Now, you can't get into karmic debt with God. It's not possible, because God doesn't take sorrow. If you do an action against God, what it'll do is it'll cut you off from God. So what you want is not to be cut off. And one of the ways in which your relationship with God carries you forward is every time you go off track, you lose contact. And as long as you're on track, you can stay in contact. So that is a very good internal guidance that helps you stay on the right track. You need other things as well, but that's one of them.
Okay, Sister Denise, I think we should stop there, because the other questions I have are two volumes for the end of this episode. So there you have it. Sister Denise has spoken to us in this episode and has helped us understand this particular aspect in Bhagavad Gita about neutrality. And I don't know if you've ever considered this subject yourself, but it's very deep, and it's what's written in this text that one has to, I'm using this as an example, cast off here in the world both good and evil actions. And this, as you see from Sister Denise's words, requires a lot of deep thought, a lot of deep churning and understanding to arrive at how you can not just understand this, but become this. Sister Denise has given us some practical examples so that you can look in your own life and ask yourself, where are you at as far as neutrality is concerned? So, Sister Denise, I found this aspect of what you shared extremely thought-provoking, and I hope you, the viewer, have also received some food for thought. And I do invite you very warmly to join us for the next episode to see how we can understand Chapter 2 deeper and apply what is contained therein in our practical lives. So thank you for joining us today, and goodbye.